We have to admit, we haven't gotten used to seeing Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie flying solo at movie premieres and award shows yet. The most recent reminder came Saturday, when Jolie premiered her fourth feature directorial project, First They Killed My Father, at the Angkor Wat Temple Complex in Cambodia, backed by all six children. I came to this country and I fell in love with its people and learned its history, and in doing so learned how little I actually knew about the world, she told the BBC's Yolanda Hakim. This country for me was my awakening. I'll always be very grateful to this country. I don't think I could ever give back as much as this country has given to me. Well, I usually don't start the book reviews with quotes from an actress and star-studded Hollywood premiere, but this time I am on purpose because Angelina Jolie recently flew into Cambodia to premiere, as you heard, a feature film that she has produced, and that got me to thinking about the country of Cambodia and all of the many historical highlights that some of us may know and many of us do not know, but nonetheless are well worth bringing to your attention. So brought two books for us today based on Angelina Jolie and her children, bringing new fame and interest in this small Southeast Asian nation, a nation a people of a certain age will remember as a land of peace and poverty, a land with a capital's name that twists the tongue to pronounce. Others will remember it as perhaps the unwilling forested highway for supplies funneled from North Vietnam to their troops and allies in South Vietnam during the Vietnam Wars in the post-World War II era. And still others will remember Cambodia for the horrors perpetrated on its people by the Khmer Rouge regime, the killing fields, as recently as the 1970s, and indeed the focus of Angelina Jolie's newest film. All those are good reasons to pick up today's featured books, but there's more as well. Cambodia, we quickly learn through the pages of A History of Cambodia by David Chandler, is a nation that is unique not only for its tragic and yet at times glorious history, but also for its surprisingly different than expected religious heritage. Snuggled tightly into a Buddhist swath of the Asian continent, Cambodia, we learn, was for many centuries the easternmost reach of mainland Hindu cultural and religious hegemony, a religion much more associated with the subcontinent of India. And this Hindu influence continues to inform Cambodian culture even today, as both the history and the travel guides point out to us. Well, Cambodia's history of glorious rise, contrasted with vicious decades-long warfares, have intrigued more than a few academics and resonate today with tourists as well. To wit, while European peoples were struggling to find their cultural way out of the post-Roman Empire's vast decline through what we now know as the European High Middle Ages, the kings of the Khmers, from whom Cambodia receives its name, were in the midst of what many now see as the golden age of Cambodian culture. Kingly rulers who imposed their cultural, religious, artistic will on the peoples over whom they ruled, creating soaring artistic wonders we call the ruins of Angkor Wat, their capital. Yet glorious as it was during those years, and those years lasted for centuries, some historians point out that it may have run from 800 to 1400 AD. Cambodia's golden age came, as so many do, to an inglorious end, falling into a centuries-long swamp of havoc that has haunted Cambodia's history for the past several hundred years, basically everything since 1400. Caught between the Chinese, the Thai, the Vietnamese, the vast number of peasants who have long inhabited the Cambodian lands were most often the only consistency that Cambodia knew. And as our author David Chandler would have it, this peasant culture that infused the land since the last glories of Angkor Wat were surprisingly similar to the peasant cultures that were encountered by 19th century French imperialists who colonized the commercially rich farmlands of the Cambodian river valleys. World War II saw the intrusion of the Japanese Empire in these lands and, once defeated, the return of the French colonials, who slowly gave way to the political machinations of the newly installed royalty, the auspices of the well-known Prince Norodom Sihanouk. This was to become a government that navigated those narrow political and economic waters of French and then American versus Vietnamese wars, falling into a short-lived military rule by the early 1970s and then the ultimate tragedy of Cambodian history, the land that produced the glories of medieval Angkor Wat, produced, albeit centuries later, the bloody regime of the Pol Pot communist-led governments. Spanning the late years of the mid-1970s, the Pol Pot years were a three-and-a-half-year regime that engaged in what many consider a modern-day genocide, as entire swaths of Cambodian society were marked for, and all too often successfully, put to death, in the name of creating a new society with, quote, no oppressors and no oppressed, end quote. This grisly time in human history soon enough labeled The Killing Fields, the title as well of a 1984 film, were a time when perhaps as many as 1.5 or even 2 million native Cambodians were massacred as the rural population was to be the focus of national government. Money was abolished, as was the concept of personal property, religion, schools, laws, markets, freedom of movement. For the Pol Pot regime, nearly anyone with any education, regardless of age, regardless of their contributions to building the too often war-torn nation, were marked for elimination. As history remembers, the Pol Pot horror was itself abolished after nearly four horrendous years by an invasion by one of Cambodia's longtime enemies, the Vietnamese, who surprised many, many observers by decamping back to Vietnam once the Pol Pot regime was relegated to the ash heap. Cambodia's long struggle back to a modicum of security and economic development. Question, how many of your shirts and jeans sport a Made in Cambodia label? Well, that period wraps up a well-researched book that leads us to the second book of today's review. The second book being Eyewitness Travels Cambodia and Laos. Indeed, it is to tourism that so much of today's reading public now knows Cambodia. Indeed, reading through the Angelina Jolie news releases, we remember that it was 40 years ago, when Cambodia became the scene of so much terror and horror and death. Since that time, a nation that was not that long ago isolated from the larger world has thrown its doors open to those wealthy enough to travel to its shores and jungles and truly glorious ruins. And while Cambodia is not yet possessed of the tourist intrigue of, say, the nation of Cuba, Cambodia is the home of one of the United Nations' cultural mainstays, the ruins of, yes, the ancient civilization of Angkor Wat, a not insignificant and growing site of international tourist destination. Many recent reports tell us that as many as 1 million visitors have made the journey through the jungles to those ruins. Will the attention brought to this ancient land by movie star Angelina Jolie continue to buzz and crackle? Well, time alone will tell. But as David Chandler tells us in his conclusion to A History of Cambodia, much of Cambodia's uniqueness appears to spring from deep continuities or refusals, rather than from calculated or prudent responses to the rapid and largely destructive influences of modern times. In more recent times, as the country has opened up, Cambodians seem to have been less willing than outside investors have been to join in the scramble for development that has mesmerized their Southeast Asian neighbors. In the process, a few Cambodians have become rich. Many are poorer than ever. And foreign investors have made enormous profits by depleting Cambodia's natural resources. The so-called timelessness of Cambodia, made up to a large extent of its own perennial and self-absorbed terms of reference, has been part of its appeal to visitors and scholars for many years. In the Pol Pot period, this conservatism was a source of enormous strength, and in the end, it was the conservatism that, at an enormous cost, defeated the Pol Pot regime. But as the country opens up, willingly or not, to the wider world, and without the promise of anyone's sustained protection, it is uncertain whether its inward-looking, family-oriented conservatism, so helpful in surviving the impact of the past in the incursions of foreign powers and ideas, will be of much help if Cambodia hopes to remain intact in the turbulent 21st century state. Interestingly enough, David Chandler also wrote the Eyewitness Travel Guide to Cambodia and to its northern neighbor, Laos. And it is in this travel guide that he is much more upbeat about the future of Cambodia, indeed spending quite a bit of time talking about Angkor Wat, the incredible ruins of that ancient city-state, but also talking about modern-day Cambodia and how many religious, cultural, special sites can be seen in the landscape, in the cities, in the Mekong River Delta that flows through that nation. It's a fascinating, both of these books, fascinating look at a country Americans probably have lost track of until Angelina Jolie brought our attention back to it. A History of Cambodia and the Eyewitness Travel Guide to Cambodia and Laos. They're both available at our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.